The Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. I always sound a little distant, but that was kind of ridiculous. Thanks very much for tuning in on this Tuesday afternoon. We're standing by waiting for John Najarian to come by, talk about Wall Street. Suzanne Muchen will be here a little bit later in the program. She has the podcast called The Big Payoff, talking about women's issues in the workplace. And the whole Rob Porter thing got a little muddied again today with some reporting by Bloomberg and then testimony on Capitol Hill by the FBI Director Christopher Wray. So we'll talk to her, I think, about that. But primarily, I want to talk to her about the 1871. She's on the board there, and they just announced a new CEO, someone to replace Howard Tolman. So we will talk to Suzanne about that. Kelly Leonard stops by as well. Speaking of podcasts, he's the co-host of Getting to Yes And we'll talk about leadership teams coming up with Kelly a little bit later in the program. But we start on Tuesdays with John Najarian from CNBC, the Najarian family office as well. And you can follow him on Twitter at John Najarian. Keep the H. He doesn't want it. John, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you very much, Ben. Great to be with, well, Stephen, sorry, I was just on with Bennett, your producer, but that's great. Thank you.
You can call me Bennett. I've been called a lot worse. Hey, okay, so I'm trying to sort out where I want to start with you today, and maybe I want to start with AmerisourceBergen. Tell me everything you know about AmerisourceBergen and why Chicago investors should be interested in that.
Well, drug distribution or pharmacy distribution, and obviously one of the largest pharmacy firms in the world, which is Walgreens Boots Alliance. So the Wall Street Journal today reported that they were doing a deal and that they had approached ABC, which is AmerisourceBergen, and that's why the stock had such a significant pop to the upside.
And so this is, we've seen this with CVS too, right? They're moving beyond just drugstores into prescription drug operations, or trying to expand their hold in order to grow that way rather than acquiring just more stores.
Exactly. And in fact, as big as they are, as I'm sure you would agree, it gets more and more difficult for CVS and or Walgreens Boots Alliance to do deals. It gets really tough, because you get into antitrust concerns about monopolies and things like that.
All right, so that's one side. And then the other side, though, I'm reading that distributors of prescription drugs, medical supplies are actually suffering a little bit today because of Amazon and the fact that it wants to move into the business a little bit more. So it seems like we have two sides of the same coin here.
Yeah, well, the fact that Amazon would look at a business that is as big as the multi-trillion dollar business of healthcare is not a surprise. Almost like Elon Musk, Amazon constantly needs to find new market opportunities that are believable that they may enter into to justify some of the prices. As great as they've done, you know, they still need to do this. And, you know, in the case of Musk, you know, whether it's launching rockets, which has nothing to do with Tesla except for, you know, popular appeal. That's what he needs to do. And as far as Bezos, his stock still trades at an absolutely, you know, sky-high valuation. I was going to say volatility, but it's not. It's the valuation that's so high. The other V word. And nonetheless, he has successfully entered in the food business with the Whole Foods move, and I think they'll probably do a little deal in the department store area in the not-too-distant future as well.
Okay, so as you say all that, and it makes sense, but I'm thinking a little bit about the Monty Python skit with the guy in the restaurant who just keeps eating and eating and eating and asks for a mint at the end, right? So, there must be a risk to these companies eating a little bit too much and becoming too big, ungovernable. You tell me.
Well, you know, you do make a great point, except that thus far anyway, Bezos has managed to keep it all under that one umbrella. In other words, once you come into his spider web, he wants to hold you there forever. You know, whether it's at first, of course, it was books, and then it was virtually anything that you could buy online. Now he's branched into AWS, which is, of course, how corporations use their data and store it and so forth through the cloud. And obviously the most recent is the Whole Foods acquisition. do they risk being a General Electric, you know, a conglomerate right. like that? I suppose, but right now they're really focused on what they do, being able to deliver it through the internet. He doesn't really want to go out and buy a Starbucks, for instance, because that's not something he's going to deliver through the internet, obviously. But he is into anything. I mean, like, if you need to shop for something, and whether it's, you know, something in the retail space or ultimately even some of the drugs and other things that you might need as far as your health care, I'm sure that anything he can deliver via the internet, they'd like to expand into that category.
You mentioned General Electric, and I see that they're dragging the Dow down a little bit today, or at least they were earlier. Some good news for Blue Apron, right? That's a company that seemed to have a lot going for it. It went public, and man, all the good news disappeared. But a little bit more good news today, anyway.
Yeah, a surprising report as far as their earnings. And despite the fact that the other company that we were just talking about that just needed that little mint, Amazon, became their big, you know, competitor yeah. almost immediately after Blue Apron came public. Their big challenge is really how do they grow, given that it costs so much per customer acquisition for them. Again, Amazon doesn't have that problem, but they do, and they don't have Alexa or any of the other things that Amazon's got to help grow that business pretty significantly. So Blue Apron will still be challenged finding places to advertise its wares, too.
All right, let me ask you a weird question. Have you seen the story okay. about, it was in the president's budget, where they might, for people who are on the SNAP program, food stamps, they might actually deliver boxes of food to them rather than giving them the money to go out and buy what they want. Did you see that story at all?
I did. Okay. I did. I don't know what to make of it yet.
I don't either. And that's what I'm wondering. I want to know what you think of it. Man, I want that contract. I want to be the one to provide the cereal to everyone who's on SNAP.
Exactly. Well, and a lot of the direction that it has gone, the food stamp program has gone, have gone more or less towards electronic payments, you know, where
right,
something the
debit
drops
cards,
onto
yeah.
a debit card. And you drag that debit card for what you want to buy. But obviously, there are some issues with that, that people will use that card in places that aren't necessarily benefiting them or their families in the way that the food was meant to benefit them. In other words, maybe they're using it for liquor and other things or exchanging
or
it.
Or trading it,
the
right.
value on that
right.
card. Yep. So that's the concern. I don't know if this is the solution that fixes that, but I know that it was part of what the president's budget that he just announced yesterday.
All right, John Najarian, what are you watching on Wall Street today? What's your tip for us?
Well, we're buying a retailer. You and I talked a lot of retail on the phone just now and Amazon and what they've done, but this retailer is Macy's. They've got earnings at the end of the month, the 27th, I think, so the very end of the month, really, and they've bought an awful lot of calls in Macy's over the past hour and a half. So we bought that. We already owned some of it for our clients at some lower prices. We added to it today.
John Najarian, great to talk to you. We'll do it again next Tuesday.
Thank you very much,
John Najarian. You watch him on the Halftime Report at CNBC. Follow him on Twitter, too, at John Najarian. It's 12:23. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, on the floor of the Senate today, yesterday, this week, they are debating immigration, how to fix it, how to help maybe the Dreamers, how to improve when it comes to not just illegal immigration, but how to reform legal immigration, which has everyone's attention, right? Jill Gonzalez is on a phone line. She is an analyst with WalletHub.com, joins us from time to time, and we're going to talk immigration today. Jill, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me back.
All right, so you guys looked at, and I want to figure out exactly the what I'm going to learn from this study, but you guys looked state by state and ranked the 50 states and District of Columbia by economic impact, right, of immigrants. Is this both legal and illegal, or this is legal immigrants, or how did you come upon this?
This would be documented and undocumented, okay, wherever the data is given. So a lot of these numbers come from places like the census, the BLS, Department of Labor, Partnership for American Economy. So a lot of different sources here.
And are there trends that we see? I mean, I'm looking at numbers 1, 2, and 3, New York, California, and New Jersey, which I guess wouldn't be big surprises. Some of the guesses that California would be number one, but those three, certainly New York is immigrant-driven when it comes to New York City. But do you see trends when it comes to states in this study?
Yeah, I mean, I would say kind of higher tech places that really focus on STEM, New York, California, New Jersey, Illinois, certainly in the top 10 yeah. here, D.C., Maryland, Virginia. So a lot of places that really look at not only the private sector, the public sector, but really expand industries as far as looking at immigrants in the workforce.
I think I saw New Jersey was number one when it comes to STEM-related jobs for immigrants.
Yeah, almost 50% of all STEM-related jobs, so science, tech, engineering, math, are held by immigrants in New Jersey, and that number is the highest, but a lot of other states, Illinois included here, come very close to that number.
Now, Illinois ranks 8th overall. Tell me about us and how it is that we came to that ranking.
Illinois ranked 8th overall. I mean, when we're just looking at the share of the foreign-born population, it's about 15% in Illinois.
Okay, so in California is number one. That's 27%, which is a pretty big number. More than one of four people in California is foreign-born. In Illinois, you said it is what, 15%?
Yes.
Okay.
And then when you look at the actual workforce, that number jumps to about 20%, about a fifth of the workforce in Illinois is made up of immigrants.
Wow.
So that number gets a little bit higher.
And so, and how do we do when it comes to keeping, you know, foreign students or STEM jobs and things like that?
So when it comes to STEM jobs specifically, so this we said was higher in most states. Illinois, about 25% of STEM workers are foreign-born. So that number tends to be higher in most states. I think Illinois is a good example of that. And Illinois is a really good example of doctors. I think states like Illinois that have really big epicenters but then get very rural have a little bit of a doctor shortage in some areas of the state. In Illinois right now, about a quarter of all doctors are foreign-born.
All right, so if we look at these numbers, what is it we should take from them? What do we learn from this, Jill?
Well, obviously, Illinois, every state on this list has a big impact from immigrants. Illinois is in the top 10, though, so really a huge part of the workforce, specifically when we look at STEM, when we look at students and international students staying in the state, giving back to the state. We see high numbers across the board.
Yeah, I think that should be a big motivator. We bring students in, we take their money for tuition, we got to figure out a way to keep them here legally to keep contributing. We've made them economically viable with their education, or I mean they paid for it obviously, but let's benefit from that. Let's keep them here too. Jill Gonzalez, analyst at WalletHub.com. Great to talk to you again. I appreciate it.
Likewise, Steve.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's 12:37. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, Suzanne Muchin is on the phone line. She is the co-host of The Big Payoff, a podcast you can hear at WGNradio.com. Suzanne, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
I have so much to talk to you about, and a lot of it breaking in the past hour or so. So let's start. You are on the board of directors, right, for 1871.
I am.
And they just announced today that they have found a new CEO to replace Howard Tolman, Betsy Ziegler. Tell me about Betsy.
So Betsy is the chief innovation officer at Kellogg. She works with entrepreneurs. She's been an investor in startups. And I think the most important characteristic about Betsy that really brought her to the table is she's just a strategist. She's very, very deliberate about the way she looks at companies and partnerships. And to be honest, this is a crowded space in Chicago right now. The whole hub incubator space is different than it was when 1871 first started. And so we need someone who's really collaborative and really focused on, you know, how we maintain our edge.
There's also often a real challenge when you are number two, when you are the second person to run an organization or an institution. So how is she equipped to do that, to take over for Tolman? And how do you see 1871? Do you see it moving in a new direction under this new leadership?
So she's actually the third, right?
Oh,
there was
sorry.
Kevin Willer, who had come from Google. That's okay. And then Howard and now Betsy. I think the idea right now is to build on success because 1871 has a brand. It's very attractive in terms of not just, you know, as we call it, butts in seats, but it's a thought leader. So I don't think we want to shift gears. But I do think, as I said, there's this open question of how do all of the leaders in this space of entrepreneurship work together so that there's 1 + 1 = 11? And also, I think there's been a shift a little bit in the thinking around the role of corporations. How do we connect entrepreneurs and startups into the corporate space? And Betsy is going to be awesome at that.
You raise an interesting point then. Is 1871 in competition with other incubators?
I mean, I'm just going to be honest in saying in a world of limited resources, 1871 is a nonprofit, and there's always competition. Now, I think it's healthy, and ideally, you don't have one giant player. You have many. But yeah, it's certainly a more crowded space. That's saying it a little bit more diplomatically.
All right. So there's that. Let's move on to, I just don't know what to make of this whole Rob Porter thing. The White House staff secretary who resigned last week. I really don't know what to make of it because it seems like he was dismissed. That's probably that is what should have happened. But the White House can't quite seem to get its message out or its story straight. Now, today, Bloomberg is reporting that the White House actually told or the FBI told the White House last July about allegations against Porter. So that would seem to fly in the face of what the White House has been telling us. The FBI director, Christopher Wray, said that the investigation into Porter was closed last year. The White House has been saying that the investigation was still open. Now, Wray did also say that they brought new information to the White House earlier this month. That could be the picture or whatever. But the idea that his investigation into security clearance was closed is contrary to what the White House has been saying. Now, here's the best part, Suzanne. Within the past hour, Anthony Scaramucci has tweeted has tweeted that John Kelly must resign.
Oh, God.
Now, remember, I think wasn't it Kelly who fired Scaramucci after 3 days?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Can we just take that telenovela off the table because it's so distracting?
It is. You're right.
Look, I think that the bigger conversation that's relevant here is, you know, we have a series of events that suggest that the White House was protecting, in some ways, men who had been accused of harming women. And they weren't forthright about what they knew and when. And while, of course, everyone deserves due process, we're talking about the White House. We're talking about the top echelon of people who have access to information, are in positions of power, and they can't get their story straight.
Well, it seems like Mr. Porter did have due process. I mean, no one's saying that he was chased before they knew it. What they're saying is that he was chased long after they knew it.
Yeah, I know. And I here's what I think. Why is there any tolerance? Why aren't we just like kids on sports teams where there's just zero tolerance? Why are we not just in a zero tolerance environment around
but
this?
But the president's right in that there has to be more than just an allegation. You know, there has to be some checking to see that there's substance
of
to
course.
That.
Agree.
So I'm with them there. So zero tolerance implies that an allegation means you're out. I'm not comfortable with that.
I mean, well, so what do you do then in a situation in which there are two stories? One, and, you know, it's not necessarily true unless somebody, a third party, was in the room.
Right.
I think what's frustrating is,
what do you
why
do?
Aren't we at least
what
suspending?
Do you do?
So that's what, when I say zero tolerance, I'm saying if it really does appear that there is controversy, in this case, why aren't we simply saying, we're not sending a man to jail, we're just saying, you know what, given this controversy, we don't think that we want you being part of the narrative in the face of this administration.
But you understand how that can be frightening to men, because what you're saying is that any woman could present an accusation. I mean, I understand the difficulty of the other part, too, but you're saying that based simply on any accusation, substance aside. It does seem like that's what you're saying.
Accusation.
Okay, go ahead then.
No, I'm saying, I think if a woman has taken it far enough, there are photographs. She was interviewed by the FBI. I mean, it's a crime.
Oh, no, I'm with you on that. No, pictures,
okay.
I'm with you on that. I was just talking in general.
Well, in general, I also think we need to consider where the environment is in which these men who have been accused are being hired. We're not just talking about somebody losing their job at, you know, a hot dog stand. Not that a hot dog stand man isn't an important job, but we're talking about the White House here. And so I'm speaking about that specifically. Hey, I think the stakes standard should be pretty darn high.
Mrs. Obama had her portrait unveiled yesterday, and people were making fun of it.
Yeah, I didn't like any of the conversation around it, to be honest. I didn't love the words that were being used to describe it, even in the New York Times. I mean, we talk about it being couturial as, you know, a suggestion that the main point of the portrait is about her clothes, or that she's rock solid cool, or that it's about glam. I find those words, it's not that they're not part of who she is, but they're not the headline of who she is. And for me, art is a discussion. It's not really like or don't like. It's what does this speak to? What does it say? And let's also be clear, they made a very specific decision, both of the Obamas, about who they chose to do these portraits. That in and of itself, that they were African-American artists. She was a female artist who did Amy Sherald, who did Mrs. Obama's portrait. This, to me, merits more than just we like it, we don't like it.
Okay, but I liked them.
I did too, right? And also, why did it matter so much how much it looked like her? I mean, can't we all say that that's her? Yeah. I feel like, is that really the goal?
No. Okay. Are you going to be in the studio next week?
Yeah. Why? Are we going to, like, duke it out physically?
We are on the same team, sister. That is Suzanne Muchen, co-host of The Big Payoff at WGNRadio.com. We'll talk next week, Suzanne.
All right. I'll see you live.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Minute, sharing the news and asking questions for small business owners. Okay, don't freak out, but another iconic 100-story building may or may not be changing its name, but it is. Until new naming rights are secured, the John Hancock Center will now be known as 875 North Michigan. And if we learned anything from the 2009 Willis Tower situation, it's that change can make or break a reputation. Speaking of change, let's talk about consolidation. Morton Grove-based retail company Land of Nod is closing all three Chicagoland locations. Sad to see it go, but this Crate and Barrel offshoot will be available online and in select Crate and Barrel stores. Yet another casualty to the e-commerce and changing digital world. Tune in tomorrow for all your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
12:53, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, go to my Facebook page. I've got a public page there, and I have already put out the podcast, Getting to Yes, and the creator, the man behind it all, is Kelly Leonard, who's in the studio with me now. Kelly, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hey, great to be here.
All right, tell me about this week's, because just reading about Daniel Coyle and his book, The Culture Code, it sounds like I'm really interested in what he has to say.
Yeah, so the subtitle is The Secrets of Success. Successful groups. So he basically went around the world and examined what made groups successful at working together. So it's not a surprise that improv's in there, because it is. But he talks about experiments, scholarly experiments, and individuals. So I'll give you an example of one of the experiments. I love it. It's called the Bad Apple Experiment. So they took a bunch of small groups and they had them have to solve a problem. But what they did was they put a confederate in each group. It was a guy, an actor, mm-hmm. whose job it was to be a jerk. And then they had him go into sessions where he was kind and good. And you know what happened? Across the board, they were 30 to 40% less successful at solving the problems.
With a jerk on board.
Yep.
Which doesn't surprise you, does it?
No, but I mean, this is the lack of productivity or the hurt in productivity that simply bad behavior costs a company. I don't think they realize that they want to really train their people to collaborate more effectively.
That the guy's not just being a jerk, he's holding everyone back.
Yeah, they're making less money.
So tell me this. I interviewed a professor from Stanford. It's been a few years ago now, and they did a study on teamwork.
Yeah.
And because I like when my kids were doing team stuff in school, I never liked it. I wanted them to be graded on their own accomplishments.
Mm-hmm.
And the study in Stanford found that teams actually did better if it stressed individual payoffs and individual results.
Well, sure. So I say this all about Second City. Like, we have a pedagogy that's all about making your partner look good, being others focused. And what is Second City known for? making stars.
Right, right.
Those things go together. Effective teams allow individuals to rise to the top. It's not fighting against that. It's fighting for that.
Right. And Coyle also talked about Popovich.
Tell me yes. about that. So the Greg Popovich story. So he's the coach of the San Antonio Spurs. So anyone who follows basketball knows this. He is yelling at his players. He's turning red. He's old school. And you're like, how are these people listening to them? And what he does off the court is he loves them. He loves them to death.
Yeah.
So the story he had, so Daniel was at a game where they got blown out. And the next day there was a film session and he was sure that just Pop was just going to lay into these guys. No, Pop showed a civil rights documentary.
Well, and so that's the thing about him, right?
He's
predictable but unpredictable.
Right. And he cares.
Always in an intelligent way.
Right. And he cares about the people who work for him and what they're going through. So the majority of that team is black and they've got money. And he basically said to them, what would you have done in this situation looking at this documentary? How does that affect your decisions today?
You see, Steve Kerr, was it last night or the night before, let his players call their own plays?
Oh, I didn't see that.
And I wish I'd thought of it earlier because he was asked about it after the game and he said, I wanted to remind them that they're in charge.
Right. Well, that's great. We have a principle in improvisation called follow the follower, and it's a leadership principle, which means that as a leader, you have to learn how to have people follow you, but you have to follow them.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Kelly Leonard, the name of the podcast, getting to Yes And, this week's guest, Daniel Coyle, The Culture Code, The Secrets of Highly Successful Groups. Check it out. I'm going to listen to it. It's already on my Facebook page. You can listen to it there or WGNradio.com.
Sounds good.